comic books, movies, TV, and more. Nerds are everywhere. It's time to assemble! It's Nerds United, a Jittery Monkey podcast. Here's your host, Greg Mahochko.
Welcome back, everybody. Episode 29 of Nerds United. We are in the Nerd Dome once more, visiting with another creator. Let me tell you this. It's a lot better than me talking for a half hour, 40 minutes about what TV show, movie or I'm watching or comic book I'm reading. I always enjoy visiting with creators. And for episode 29, we're going where we've never taken Nerds United before, and that is to Europe. The United Kingdom. More specifically, we're going to Sheffield, and I'm joined on the show by Sam Johnson, and he has an independent comic book publishing company called Actuality Press, and he also writes The Almighties, which issue zero just released this past Wednesday, November the 5th. So, Sam, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
And we got to clear the air, and I have to publicly, formally apologize because you sent me a tweet a week ago saying, what do you think? You know, would you like to have me on the show? And because I missed the notification, this should have been in the normally allotted Wednesday show, but because I goofed up, we're doing a midweek, a weekend release instead of a Wednesday show. So I apologize, Sam, but very happy to have you on.
That's quite all right. Thank you.
Let's get a little bit more about you. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you got into this crazy world of comics.
Okay. Well, I've been getting published for about 8-9 years. How I originally got into comics was Image were doing some talent searches for writers, where you'd submit like an outline for their characters. So I did some stuff for that. I didn't get anywhere with that, but that was like my first thing, and I got a taste for it. And then Wizard Comics magazine, if you remember them, I entered a talent search for them and came joint second. So that sort of kicked things off. And then it's basically the internet that sort of facilitated things happening more, because before the internet was big, it was kind of a case of going to conventions and sending off submissions cold through the post. Whereas with the internet, I mean, anyone that has me on Facebook knows I use it a lot. So it's been very good for making contacts and also putting my creative teams together. I mean, most of the artists I work with are in places like Argentina, so nowhere near me. But yeah, the internet's just great.
And it's oddly, I mean, it's cliche to say that the internet has opened up the world, you know, but I mean, we're having this conversation obviously because of the internet. I mean, we're doing this over Skype, you know, but the fact that, you know, like-minded individuals can get together, you know, you can put projects together through, you know, with oceans in between you. It's really something astounding, and it's really a very applicable use of the internet. I mean, it's more than just bitching about movies and looking at porn, folks. I'm telling you, the internet has other uses.
Mostly it's that, but there is time for other stuff. Yeah.
So, at what age did you kind of get interested in comics? As far as, you know, from the consumer as a reader.
Well, I was into them as a kid, and then, as happens with a lot of people, you sort of drift away from them in teenage years, and then I came back to them when I was in there was a Virgin comic. Well, it wasn't a Virgin comic store; it was a Virgin megastore that had a comics part in it, and I ended up in there for some reason. And what caught my eye was Rob Liefeld's New Mutants stuff, where he brought us Cable and Deadpool, which Deadpool is a character I'm gunning to work on myself. I'm not high profile enough at this time, but that's something I've got designs on. And yeah, it was that stuff that brought me back in and got me into the X-Books as they were then, and it grew from there. And I've been with it ever since then, which is, you know, going back quite a ways now.
It's like, I think you hit the nail on the head. Everybody hits that point, it seems, where, you know, you're reading comics as a kid and they're just great, and then you get to high school maybe, and comics, at least, you know, in the 90s when I was in school, kind of comics weren't popular. I mean, nobody was running around with a Captain America shield on their shirt.
No.
Or you know, the Batman logo maybe, but it was far less common, far less accepted. Now, it doesn't matter. I mean, you could be Spider-Man for Halloween, for Comic-Con, from the time you're 5 to the time you're 35. It doesn't matter because it's grown in its acceptance.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it was the 90s when Marvel fell on hard times, or at some point in the 90s, some of it was a boom time for them. Whereas now, it's the biggest movies of all time are Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, Avengers. Marvel, where they are now in terms of the comics, is very strong. I mean, I'm very much looking forward to their next big thing, which is Secret Wars, even though we haven't finished the current big thing yet. And they're doing good stuff, and they've really hitting it right. Whereas, as I say, there was a time there when it wasn't so much, and now, of course, you know, like your Iron Man, your Captain America, your Thor, they're all absolutely, you know, universally known.
And it's one of those, like you said, getting those properties, and specifically, I think, the Guardians of the Galaxy. Guardians of the Galaxy was not a top-tier property, you know, until this summer. They kept generating buzz and more interest. And before you know it, I mean, it's a movie. It's the highest grossing movie of the year, and it was wildly entertaining. And they've already announced, I think they announced Guardians of the Galaxy 2 before 1 was ever in theaters. So that's what Marvel's able to do, you know, on the right side. And like you mentioned, with Secret Wars and a lot of those other, you know, past crossover titles, Civil War, House of M, all these things that you know, are being teased for summer of 2015. What's your take on that from a you know, consumer standpoint, from a fan standpoint? Is this something that, are you looking at, they might be following in the footsteps of what DC did a couple of years back and relaunching the universe?
Well, they're kind of toying with us a bit in that area, because Axel Alonso, the editor-in-chief, is kind of sort of laughs that off but doesn't say yes or no to it. I think they like to have fun with you. I mean, the nature of those teasers sort of prompted quite a few what-the-hell reactions. But I don't think they'll do it. I mean, what they've been doing has worked, so why, you know, then reboot it? I couldn't see the logic in doing that. I mean, it seems to me that these things that are lined up for Secret Wars are revisiting all their sort of big events and alternate realities, but bringing them into one major event. I couldn't see them rebooting, and I don't think it would be something that would go down well with fans. I mean, DC's New 52 reboot had a lot of friends and a lot of enemies, but Marvel at the time were very firmly against doing something like that. So I can't see it happening. And I'm well into Marvel. I run a Marvel Now fan page on Facebook. So I'm very much into what they do. I'm not just going to keep saying I can't see them doing a reboot. I've said it.
To that end, I mean, it sounds like you are a Marvel guy. Is there anything on DC that you like or that you follow?
Yeah, DC, as in general, for some reason I don't connect with the way I do Marvel, but Doom Patrol is something that I'm a fan of, and Grant Morrison's take on it, which if anyone's read that will know is completely out there, is actually the biggest influence on my stuff. So Yeah, I mean, I'm not a DC guy. I'm more of a Marvel guy, and more into indies. But Doom Patrol is certainly under Morrison was just about my favorite thing ever. Another comic DC did, which was also sort of outside of their norm, was this comic called Amazing Man that some people may have heard of, and it was kind of like a almost like a soapy sitcom type thing that had a superhero as one of the characters, but he wasn't a proper superhero. He was a bit of a sort of Fruit Loop and kind of harmless. But it was more character, though it had that superhero connection. It was more about the characters and their relationships. And that's an influence on my stuff as well. So yeah, DC, not a DC guy, but there's a couple there that are very big with me.
And you've mentioned, you know, Grant Morrison, Rob Liefeld. Are those as being influences? Are there any others that you just appreciate? You know, from the creative standpoint, you just appreciate what they've done or what they're doing now.
Yeah, well, my favorite comic at the moment is Ryan Brown's God Hates Astronauts from Image, which is just nuts. It's its own thing, and it's. People running around with like Admiral Tiger eating a cheeseburger, I think, is one of the characters, and he's constantly got this cheeseburger in his hand, and it's just loopy. It's I actually think it has a similar sensibility to my comic The Almighties, but it's very much its own thing. There's nothing else like it, and I'd recommend Googling it if you're not aware of it, because you can read stuff for free to check it out to see if it's your thing first, and it's a lot of fun.
And that was God Hates Astronauts?
Yeah.
And that's an Image comic. Now, you mentioned The Almighties, which is yours, which you've been working on, but you also started a I guess, publishing company would probably be the best way to put it, Actuality Press. Tell me a little bit about the formation of that.
Yeah, well, I don't really describe as a publishing company as such, more of an imprint. It's something I've been publishing stuff under for a while, but what's new is that we've just started a website for it. So whereas before my comics had like their own websites and their own Facebook pages, we've now got an actualitypress.com, which brings everything together under the same umbrella. So that's the main point of it, really, because as I say, I'm all over Facebook, and you know, people may that are aware of, like, Geek Girl is my most well-known comic, maybe aware of some of my stuff and not others, and having them all together, like, as well as the website, we've now got the Actuality Press Facebook page. So it's just more of a way to sort of cross over my readerships, really. I'm not someone that's looking to, I mean, I've had stuff, I've self-published stuff, I've had stuff published with other publishers, so it's not like this is what I'm doing now, I'm going to be self-publishing everything, but from where I'm at the moment, it's that's the kind of current outlet.
And you mentioned Geek Girl, tell me a little bit about that title, that story, what has been going on in there?
Well, Geek Girl is well, there's this guy Trevor Goldstein, who's like a Brainiac College geek. He invents these super tech glasses that are supposed to endow him with superpowers, so that he has an edge over this sort of beefcake of a guy that this girl he's been crushing on for 6 months is going out with. But then him and his friend Jeff get drunk and lose these glasses to a game in a game of strip poker to a hot college chick called Ruby Kay, who up until that point is living quite a sort of vacuous sort of surface level existence with like the cool kids. And then these glasses, due to a glitch in their programming, though they do give her powers, they also mess with her brain, and kind of this has an alienating effect on her clique, and she discovers who her real friends are. So that's the setup with that. Issue zero of that is out, has been out for a while, is on its third print, and there's a mini series in the works. It's going slowly, but it's going, and it's a 4-issue mini. The artwork's done pretty much for the first two issues, and we're continuing to work on it.
Very good, very good. Now, when we look at Actuality Press, how many titles are under that brand?
You've got Geek Girl, the Almighty's Cabaccini Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman.
Okay, so...
Three.
Okay.
Yeah, as I say, I'm not, you know, it's kind of an outlet for me. I'm not like looking to, you know, bring loads of titles under that umbrella. It's an imprint for my stuff at this stage, and that's not to say that these wouldn't then, you know, progress. I mean, like Geek Girl, when that's done, I would be shopping that to Image Comics because I think it will be of that caliber. But this is the kind of starting point for these characters.
And tell me about some of the artists, because you said that you're working with people on a global scale. I mean, Argentina is where you mentioned you get a lot of your artists from. Who are some of these artists that you have worked with in the past?
Okay, well, Eleonora Cortzaz is the girl I work with most. She's been involved in the Almighty's for a while because we had an issue one of it out before, so issue zero actually comes after issue one, but we've got a new variant of issue one out as well, so you can, you know, catch up on that. Pablo Zambrano also involved in that. Cabaccini, Voodoo Junkie Hit Woman, which is an ex-crack whore turned hit woman with mystical powers. She's made a few appearances in an anthology called FX, and the miniseries of her is in the works. Most of the artwork for that is done now, although still a lot of colouring and stuff to do. And that, because that miniseries is broken up into short stories and takes place in sort of different worlds, like this dimension she goes into called the Infinity. So that facilitates using different artists. And The Almighty's One is broken up into sort of the team's initial first missions. And what we did there was Pablo Zambrano, Eleanor Cortzaz, DC White. We had illustrating one mission each, whichever one worked to their particular strengths as an artist. So it flows all together. We deliberately got artists that are similar enough that it doesn't feel disjointed, but each bit plays to their strengths, and I think it works really well like that. And also, you know, as anyone involved in self-publishing and indie comics will know, it can be quite an operation to get these comics finished. So it's if you can do it with more than one artist involved, it's beneficial to getting it done quicker.
Well, let's turn our focus now to the Almighty's. As we mentioned, issue number zero became available this past Wednesday, November 5th. But I want to go back to number one, because number one, you know, tells a big chunk of the tale, and you get a lot of history. When did you first release the Almighty's number one?
That came out. It came out around about the time of the Avengers movie, which was deliberate because it's Avengers parodying. It parodies a lot of the big. Again, as I say, I'm a Marvel fan, so it's not. There's no malice intent in that. It parodies big Marvel crossovers from like Civil War to Fear Itself. So yeah, the new variant cover is a black and white, because it's a limited version. It's a black and white variant version of our parody of the Avengers movie poster. So if you see it, you'll see that it very much resembles that. So yeah, it was time to coincide originally with the release of the Avengers movie.
And you've got the Almighty's, which is a team of five, by my understanding. Tell us a little bit about these characters, and how about I'll lead you in. I'll give you the name of the character, and then you give me the quick, you know, the lowdown on
cool.
That particular member of the Almighty's. Let's start with Maxitron.
Okay, well, Maxitron is. He sort of thinks he's more intelligent than he is, that he's smart, but he's got an arrogance which is belies an insecurity, which this becomes very evident in the Almighty's One, when he's got concerns about areas in a particular, I'm trying to phrase this delicately, I don't know what age range we're going for on this show, but let's say it's in the genital area. There's some insecurity. So this becomes a running sort of gag throughout issue one.
So you're saying he's trying to compensate for something?
He's trying to compensate for something, but it's not quite what you're inferring from that. But he's, in general, he does believe that he's super intelligent, and he is intelligent, but he's not as intelligent as he thinks he is. He's not as strong as he thinks he is. So he portrays this arrogant persona, but if, again, in the Almighty's One, if you actually look at his role in the battles, he's probably the least effective of them, despite being, I mean, he's kind of won this role as the leader due to his unflappable self-belief. So yeah, well, by no means is he a joke character as such. He's not as great as he thinks he is, and he thinks he's pretty great.
Well, if you think you're pretty great and you're not quite as great as you think you are, you still got to be pretty good, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But he thinks he's the best, the best.
I got you. Moving on, Nightfang.
Okay, well, two of the characters of the Almighties are created by Mike Gagnon, who's the co-writer, co-creator. So Nightfang is one of Mike's. Nightfang is a cocky British punk rocker who got into, him and his pals got into an altercation with a werewolf after getting thrown out of a nightclub. And he was the only one to survive because he managed to take out the werewolf, but not before getting bitten by it and clawed by it. So he now has the ability to change into a werewolf, and he's a cocky bugger that he kind of grounds the team in a way, though, because while everyone else is kind of, maybe not all of them, but some of them are quite sort of lost in the world of tights and capes, which I'll get onto more when we cover the other characters, but he sort of views everything with a raised eyebrow.
Very skeptical, perhaps?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's jump then to Miss F.
Right, okay, well, that brings me back to what I was saying about being lost in the tights and capes world.
Okay.
Miss F is a former downtrodden housewife that was bitten by a radioactive dust mite. Now, at the time of this, she was in an oppressive marriage, and her husband wouldn't let her use her powers because he's basically a misogynist. She's now thrown off the shackles of her oppressive marriage, but is carrying around these issues, mainly against men, which she takes out on crime. So she's kind of thrown herself headlong into this world of superheroes, but possibly her motivations for doing it are not the best, because, as I say, she's got unresolved issues. So her anger can come out when maybe it's not most opportune.
I remember one piece of dialogue from Miss F, and I believe it was in number one, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, and where one of the other members of the team was going to step in and you know, try to protect her or whatever, and she basically said, I can take care of this myself, thank you very much.
Yeah, I mean, that is from issue one, and that's a very big thing for her, because she took, you know, she was in this chained to the kitchen sink role for a long time, and so now she's free and also embracing being single after having been in this marriage. So she's very much, you know, she can handle herself, which she can, but as I say, sometimes the anger comes out when it may not be the most useful time for it to do so.
I don't want to get into any spoilers here, because I want people to check out the Almighty's number zero, but there's a nice little line in there, a throwback to classic vintage 1980s television, when they're talking about Mason, and essentially I know you know exactly what reference I'm talking about, but you know, if you can find him and if you can afford him, maybe you can hire this mercenary. Tell me about Mason.
Yeah, well, Mason is Mike's other character, and he's a former Black Ops guy who's basically managed to kind of erase any sort of records of himself. So what you're referring to, that occurs when you've got Joe Cyborg, who's a guy of indeterminate or undetermined position working at the White House. He wants to put a super team together, and he's reviewing the dossiers of the Almighty's. And what he's reviewing for Mason is something that Mason has just put out there as a smokescreen. So, as you know, again, without giving that gag away completely, he's reading this and he thinks it's one thing, and then as Stefanos points out to him, it's Mason has just nicked this, lifted this from an 80s TV show to smokescreen his true origin.
And you mentioned the final member of the Almighty's in Stefanos, and this is kind of a unique character because he doesn't look like a superhero. His day job is very, I would kind of consider it mundane.
Yeah.
Tell me about Stefanos, because as you read on, and in fact, right there in issue number one, I mean, when you go back and read that very first issue, he has what's the phrase I'm looking for? He has a perhaps a position above where you think that he would. If you judge a book by his cover, you're not thinking of Stefanos as you know being elite as he is.
No, well, it's not spoilerific to say that Stefanos works in a kebab shop, a takeout selling gyros, but also is an advisor for Barack Obama, and it's not really apparent why that is the case, but it is, and so he's sort of in it. We kind of back in the Almighty's one, we when we were promoting that originally, we were kind of like comparing him to Wolverine because he's everywhere at once, and also whereas Wolverine has his claws, Stefanos has like a big slab of meat with a spike poking through it. Well, a big kebab on a stick. So Stefanos manages his time between work for Obama, the Almighty's, and also is takeout. So he may have to slip out of battle at some point to make sure that his idiot nephew hasn't burned the takeout down, because
I'm getting the fries right. It had to do with burning the fries or something, didn't
it? Well, the guy, the kid that looks after the place when Stefanos is otherwise engaged is not the full shilling, as we say in England. So needs an eye kept on him. So yeah, if he's put the fries in, and Stefanos starts to get paranoid about that, Stefanos may have to go back and check that he hasn't burned the place down, because the cousin has done that previously.
I like how issues 0 and 1, or 1 and 0, from a publishing time frame, how they really complement each other. You've got to have read issue number 1 to understand some aspects of issue 0, but at the same time, 0 also has more of the actual backstory on the characters.
Yeah. I mean, part of the reason we've put out a new edition of issue 1 at the same time as 0 is because they do tie together. Now, most of issue 0, it stands alone, but what happens in the sort of climactic, it's kind of three stories or a number of stories making up issue 0, but the climactic one involves Stefanos traveling back in time to issue 1. So you've got a big battle at the end of issue 1, which involves the Almighty's taking on the Adolf 3000 robot, and something happens in that Obama personally invites Stefanos, gives him a sort of cosmic cube type device to try and go back and undo. So if you read the Almighty Zero 1 and how that plays out, when you read the Almighty 0, you'll find that Stefanos actually appears through time into that battle, which also creates the problem of there then being two Stephanoses at this time, and the old rule about not messing with time, which if you've got Stephanos C and Stephanos, that could cause some sort of ripple problem, which is what things build to at the end of the issue. But I must also mention that issue zero has a potential new member for the team, which is Wayne Winston. I mentioned earlier I was a big fan of Deadpool, and Wayne Winston is a parody of Deadpool. So if you think, and the obvious question that comes up there is, Deadpool's already a parody. How can you parody Deadpool? But I think if you see what we do with Wayne Winston, you'll get it. So he's introduced in issue zero, because when Joe Cyborg and Stephanos are reviewing the dossiers of the teammates, Joe Cyborg is not necessarily sold on all the members. So Wayne Winston is his backup should he decide any need replacing. And we've got a whole adventure with him in issue zero, because basically his bizarre family live in this underground lair called Subterranea, and they're threatened with eviction, and this little demon imp creature is coming in to throw them out. So that's your intro to them, and how Wayne deals with that in his Deadpool parodying fashion.
And if you think about it, it makes perfect sense. If there's going to be a landlord in hell, it's going to be some little demon imp type person.
Yeah, well, he's actually more sort of the enforcer. I mean, this is tying into. I mean, it's not hell. He is from hell. It's not Subterranea is below the surface, but it isn't hell.
I got
you. What we're doing there is we're setting up something bigger that'll pay off in the next Almighty's book, which will hopefully be out next year. So this, where they live in this sort of hollowed out whale skeleton, and this whale had ended up there because it's a kind of gateway to other dimensions. So it got pulled through this portal, and then it being on barren land just died and got chewed up by the critters that lived down there. But the reason Nasty, who's this demon, gets sent in to evict Wayne and his family is this sort of monstery alien-y type character called Mookie is wanting to sort of lay claim to this area because he wants to utilize it to access other dimensions, which he's got big plans for that, as I say, will come together in the next Almighty's book.
One other character I saw pop up in issue zero that wasn't in number one, and that was Benny. What can you tell me about the Crusher?
Right. Well, that's the kind of I had. There's been a self-contained Miss F story appeared in IFX Anthology, which is what introduced her, and that was the character you're referring to is a fallen Canadian superhero. Miss F is also Canadian, and she kind of pays him a visit in hopes of becoming his sidekick, but he's had a big fall from grace, so he's basically just sat watching cartoons in his shorts now and has put on a load of weight and doesn't look like he can come back. So that's kind of where the Almighty's come in for her, because she's a rookie. She's throwing herself into this, but she doesn't know what she's doing. She's wanted to be a sidekick to what was formerly Canada's greatest superhero. So she needs help. So the Almighty's are what can give her that. So that's kind of her reason to be a part of a team.
So we won't be seeing Benny in the future?
Well, it's not, that's not out of the question. And there is, like, if you, let me think of the best place to find it. If you Google Sam Johnson comics, it'll bring my blog, and on there you can find there's like a 3-page strip with Miss F versus Mr. Wang, who's this supervillain that adopts like a grotesque racial stereotype guises to set back racism 30 years, and he appears in that, and I can't say too much about that without giving away the twist in it, but he's on shaky ground. He was this great superhero. He lost to like a loser villain, and it's shaken him badly. So something happens in between the story I've just referred to and the Almighty's that there's a reason why those two didn't team up, because he kind of makes a comeback, and it looks like something's happening there, but there's something we're missing that's meant he hasn't stayed on the scene. So yeah, there's more from him going on there. Whether that'll be shown as its own story, whether it'll be referred to as Miss F, is to be determined. But yeah, he's a character that exists in their universe.
Now, you mentioned maybe next year, Almighty's number two. Is that about the time frame that we're looking at as far as getting the next issue out, about every year or so, or?
Yeah, well, it won't be number two. It'll be another one shot, because they do all stand alone. So yeah, I mean, at the moment we're looking at that, and then hopefully a trade paperback of the three that have come so far. I mean, we'd like to do a full series. We've written stuff in that direction, but at the moment we're kind of sort of building the brand and raising people's awareness of it, which again is part of the reason for releasing a new variant of issue one, because issue one was very well received, but we've just got to expand the audience.
How many, how far down, how many stories, how many, even standalone issues, how much of this universe do you have thought out, outlined, written out? How far down does this story go, at least if not on paper, in your mind?
Well, I mean, you've got your three one shots, and there's a continuity between everything, and then we've rough scripted what would be a 3-issue miniseries. A good chunk of that's done. We've got ideas. I mean, some ideas that were too big to fit into that miniseries. So there's already ideas that would follow that. But I mean, it's not a vanity project. You know, a lot of my time currently is spent promoting it. So I really want to build the audience up, and if we can then justify, if we can say there's a big enough audience there to do a mini series, then we'll do that. I mean, we'd like to do an ongoing series if that's possible, but it's tough out there for indie books. So we're not sort of throwing money at the wall. We're doing concentrating on getting quality products out there, and as I say, issue one was very well received. Just starting to get issue zero reviews coming in, which has so far been good as well. So yeah, I mean, and also I'd say on Facebook, just getting awareness up there. I mean, the Almighty's have got their own page as well as the Actuality Press page. So yeah, I mean, for the rest of this year, I'm not even looking to do any more on the actual book. It's just about sort of shouting about it.
How would be the best way, or what would be the best way for folks to find how can they acquire the Almighty? So maybe that's the question that I need to ask.
Okay, well, the easiest way to get it, you can get it at Comixology, 0 and 1. It's going to be more outlets. So basically, that's your immediate easy one. You can get them both at now. Go to actualitypress.com. You'll find ways to get it in print, and as I say, there'll be more venues to be added as well.
Now, are you going to, having never been to England or United Kingdom ever. It's in the plans. It's on the bucket list. Someday I'd love to get over there. You know, hit up a pub, have a pint or eight. But you know, do they have? I'm sure they have. You know, Comic Cons, things like that. Is that something where you can also, you know, help spread the word? You know, if there was somebody, tell me a little bit about just the culture over there.
Oh yeah, no, I mean it's similar. It's not going to be as grand. You've not got a San Diego in England, but there's a lot of comic conventions. I'm going to be at one in April, which is a Yorkshire cosplay convention that they've had to move to a bigger venue because it's doing well, and hopefully going to be there with my friend Amy, who cosplays as Geek Girl, so she's kind of the official Geek Girl model. So that's the next one I've got lined up. There's the convention scene. The only thing that you have to watch a bit with it as a publisher is there's a lot of them and a lot of new ones. So though it's good and it's growing, for me, if you have too many running, you know, too close together, one sort of takes away from the other. So I'm quite selective in what I do with those. But I've got the Yorkshire Cosplay Con for next year is the next one I've got lined up, and I'd like to do. I mean, I 100% want to do ones in the US. The only reason I haven't done that already is I want to have a full mini series out before I do that. So. As I say, the Geek Girl and Carbaccini miniseries are in the works.
I was about to ask, you know, what it's like to see someone cosplay as one of your characters, and then you mentioned your friend Amy as Geek Girl. So then I'll tweak my question. What would your reaction be if someone, you know, came up to you at a con or something like that, and they had put the effort in to be one of your characters from The Almighty, and for practicality's sake, maybe they didn't go full werewolf suit, but maybe as Maxitron, you know, they put that together. Obviously, you know, Mason and Stefanos, I always mispronounce that. Their costumes are a bit more. I don't know, mundane or everyday, you know, but somebody puts in the time for Maxitron. That's got to impress you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, as I say, my friend Amy that's done the Geek costume, it's a very elaborate costume. And yeah, it's great. And she's not the only one that's cosplayed as Geek Girl. I mean, Geek Girl, as I say, is the thing I'm most known for. That gets the biggest following. And I think when you see the image of Geek Girl, that's something that's caught people's imagination. Stefanos, all you've got to do is shave your head and put a dirty t-shirt on and you're dressed as Stefanos.
I can do it.
I would get a buzz as of seeing anyone cosplaying any of my characters. Carbaccini would be a very interesting one to come across.
Sam, I want to thank you for joining me here on Nerds United. A big appreciation that you reached out to me. That was unexpected, and just, you know, I got a big kick out of that. So thank you very much for that. And any parting words that you have. I know that you can be found. Of course, I'll link all these on the website for this post. But if you want to, you know, plug all the Facebook, all the Twitter, you know, and get your name out there as much as possible here at the end.
Yeah, well, I mean, the best thing to do, as I say, is I've set up actualitypress.com to sort of bring everything together. So on the homepage of that, you know, if you're interested in Geek Girl, if you're interested in Carver, if you're interested in the Mighties, there's all the links on there. And you can get as well, there's like a free digital comic, which is Carver's first adventure, that you can get off there as well. So yeah, just go to actualitypress.com, and whether you like kebab men or werewolves or hot chicks with glasses, it's all there for you.
Well, Sam, I again want to thank you for joining me here in the Nerd Dome, being on Nerds United episode 29. Looking forward to more from Actuality Press, more from the Almighties. I'm going to go and do a little searching on myself, not on myself, obviously, that's silly, but do a little bit more and familiarize myself a bit more with Geek Girl and Cobb Rossini. Am I pronouncing that right?
Cheney. But that is going to happen a lot. That has already happened a lot, so don't worry about that.
I feel better knowing that I'm not the first and probably won't be the last. So check out, and again, go to actualitypress.com. You can get the links to the Almighties, which we've been talking mostly about here on Nerds United 29. Also, Geek Girl and Cobra Cheney, the voodoo junkie hit woman. And his name is Sam Johnson. Sam, once again, thank you, sir, for joining me on the show, and look to visit with you again down the road.
Thanks very much, Greg.
And this is Nerds United, episode 29, a wonderful, hopefully wonderful, Jittery Monkey production.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.